I'm told that we have time for some questions, if anyone has some. Yes, sir.
Who's the official, in your estimation, who should decide that you should censor IC, but not censor racialist or sexist or homophobic language?
I think all those are censored. This was my personal undertaking against ICT, and happily it was successful. I understand your dissent, but I'm sure you recognize my right to do that. Yes, sir.
Mr. Esmond, thank you for being here. What would you say to critics, and I have to admit that I am one of them,
that's okay,
who say that while you are perfectly, you're perfectly qualified to have your opinion about these issues,
mm-hmm.
you're completely unqualified to be a spokesperson for these issues?
Well, that's your opinion, sure.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, that's, indeed, I consider myself qualified. I have a long history, dating back, as I said, to the civil rights movement, long before it got fashionable. That wasn't as much fun as you could imagine it was. And especially if you're trying to get jobs in Hollywood at that time. But that's the wonder of this country. The right to dissent, the right to disagree. Don't question it, applaud it. Yes, sir, standing in the back.
I'm not sure about your answer on the censorship. Would you please clarify, do you defend or not the right of ICT and people like him to spew out these type of lyrics? And along with that, please comment on the Nuremberg anti-abortion website. Do you defend their right to say what they are saying on that website?
I'm not familiar with that website, but I know that there are some pretty wild things on websites all over the country. I'm beginning to doubt the utility of the computer after all. But what was the beginning? I'm sorry, I lost the beginning.
Do you defend the right of ICT to do what he did, not being molested by government? It's one thing to say to take.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he certainly had the right to do that.
Involve yourself by government. And you, their role in censoring and protecting people, does ICT have the right to do that without government interference?
Yes, indeed. And the government did not interfere in this. This was him and me. And Time Warner, which is a formidable opponent, I can promise you. As I said, I wasn't joking when I said I'm never going to get a picture from Warner's or a job or a good review from Time Magazine again. Absolutely, he has the right. Of course he does. And I have the right to oppose him. So, yes, sir.
I was wondering if you had any comments on the moral leadership or lack thereof exhibited by the President of the United States in the recent years.
As is so often the case, Mr. Shakespeare provides us with the best. He's talking about, this is in the mouth of Richard II. Well, Richard II, is awaiting trial. And he said, I must forget what I have been and yet remember what I must be now. As usual, you can't do it better than Mr. Shakespeare. There was another part to your question. No, that was it. Okay. Short question, short answer. Yes, sir.
Two World War II pictures are up for an Academy Award, Thin Red Line and Saving Private Ryan. What do you think is the significance of that right now in our history?
I'm, of course, not particularly equipped, other than as a filmmaker. I think they're both good films, and my personal opinion, Saving Private Ryan is somewhat better, but they're both very good. Terry Malick's film, which is his first film in 20 years, and I think it's a good movie. I think it probably is in part a response to our millennial awareness that we're coming to a closing of a time in the history of the country and in the history of the world. And I guess some of you, you're doubtless aware, perhaps some of you have read Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation. That's supposed to be my generation, which is very flattering. He calls us the greatest generation because we survived the Depression, we won World War II, and then won the Cold War. Without, may I say, firing a shot. That is remarkable. And I think that has maybe something to do with why it struck both Mr. Spielberg and Mr. Malick to do these two films separately, of course. But they thought, we have to make another comment about this so people don't forget it. That's the problem of the historian, making certain that people remember. I don't think anyone would deny that the Great Depression, World War II, and the Cold War were the seminal events that were the closing decades of the 20th century. And I think that's why they made it, and that's why these are important films. Somewhat related, but if I can turn back a minute to my anxieties about the fraying of the cultural fabric of the country, which I do perceive. I was at one of those damned A-list parties not too long ago. There was a couple of guys that I wanted to talk to, and I fell into conversation with an overwhelmingly beautiful and enormously successful actress. Not a bad actress, actually. And we fell into this conversation. And she said about how the country seems to be splitting up into gypsy camps, each with its own agenda, which is to be not only defined, but defended as separate from the country. And she said, well, now, wait a minute. Look what it says in the dollar bill. A pluribus unum, from one, many. And I said, actually, you've got the Latin translated just backwards. It's from many to one, as in one nation. And she said, no kidding. Well, whatever. There, I think I put my finger on the thing that makes me worry, it worries me. There is we are becoming a well-whatever generation, and we shouldn't be. I forget who it was that said, he who cannot remember history is doomed to repeat it. I believe that deeply. I think history is not only the most important subject, it is, in the end, the only subject. My God, I'm launching into another speech, I didn't mean that. Sir.
Good job, the presidency of the NRA seemed to taste the political fire line, seeing bid for senatorial presidential race in the future.
In their connection with the NRA? No.
For you.
Oh, I've been president of the United States 3 times already. No, whatever flaws I see in President Clinton, I do recall that it has to be the hardest job in the world. And I wish him well, I wish the country well. Madam, sir.
Would you accept British sovereignty or any other sovereignty in return to the abolition of political correctness?
I missed the beginning of the sentence, sir.
Would you accept British sovereignty or anyone else's sovereignty in return for the abolition of political correctness?
Well, of course, we do not have to deal with British sovereignty. We did that over 200 years ago. Did it pretty well, too. There's my young Republican friend there. I see he's paying better attention than he did last year. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
What do you think about last week's decision that gun manufacturers should be held responsible for gun violence?
I'm sorry, Mr. Weston.
What do you think about last week's decision that gun manufacturers should be held responsible for gun violence?
I think that is formed with great dissent among the jury and will not withstand judicial scrutiny. I think gun manufacturers make a very well-designed and well-functioning product. They constantly are dealing with problems of this kind. The legislature in Georgia passed some kind of a censure of them, a judgment, whereupon the governor of Georgia passed a law banning frivolous lawsuits. I think we're going to see a lot of this. And the fact is, there's a difference between the tobacco manufacturers and the gun manufacturers. Everyone knows and has known for decades that cigarettes kill. They killed my father, they killed my stepfather, they killed my sister. Only my mother and I escaped that death. Firearms in the hands of honest, decent, informed people hurt no one any more than cars do. Though cars kill far more people, infinitely more people, of course you know, than firearms. There is a CNN poll last week demonstrated that 63% of the public are not responding favorably to these polls. Yes, sir. Your ma'am. Yes, ma'am, I'm sorry. I agree.
But I understand the NRA is opposed to the domestic violence.
It's opposed to the
domestic violence ban, which is finally passed and signed into law, which prevents convicted child abusers and spousal abusers from possessing firearms. I'm wondering why the NRA was so eager to defend their right to have guns.
Felons should not. It's against the law for a felon to own a firearm. It is now. Well, I beg your pardon. Go ahead.
The NRA is against convicted
I'm not quite certain the connection you're making between child abusers. You mean spousal abuse? Certainly. I think all decent people are opposed to spousal abuse. It's a major problem. Indeed. Have I still misunderstood your question?
The NRA, Congress supports a bill that would prevent people who are convicted of spousal and child abuse from possessing firearms. And the NRA is vehemently opposed to this bill. So I'm wondering if you also defend the rights of child abusers and spouse abusers to hold guns as well.
Now, the fact is, and the stumbling block for those who oppose the possession of firearms is unlike automobiles or tobacco manufacturers or alcohol distillers, which are not protected by the Bill of Rights. The right to keep and own arms is undeniably and unarguably forbidden. You cannot deny, as Thomas Jefferson said, our purpose is that every man be armed. The Second Amendment is a very difficult thing to get over. What is important is to see that no one is unfairly singled out here. It's inappropriate and denied in the Constitution. The way to deal with criminal violence is not to take away their guns. There are some 220 million firearms in private hands in this country, almost all of them in the hands of decent citizens. By and large, criminals don't buy guns anyway, they steal them. That's what they do for a living. And they are responsible for a great deal. And it is important that we do what has been done in Richmond, Virginia, where federal attorney instituted full enforcement of the federal laws against gun violence. There are some 20,000 laws against gun violence. He said, okay, let's use them. If any felon is caught carrying a firearm, even if he is not at that time involved in a crime, 5 years, not in a county jail, in a federal penitentiary. He instituted that in Richmond. That has reduced crime, gun crime, in Richmond by 64%. The mayor of Philadelphia, when I last year said, give me one, because Richmond is not a very large city, as you probably know. When I said, give us one city, any city, where we can try this Project Exile again, the Mayor England of Philadelphia said, you can have Philadelphia. We have a terrible crime problem. And I went 10 days ago to Philadelphia, and we had a great to-do about it with the press and so forth. And other cities that follow suit, I think this will be a huge change in crime in this country, huge change. Oddly enough, the administration doesn't want to back it. I think partly because we thought of it, and partly because it works. The federal government is very disinclined to prosecute violations of federal gun laws. They want to pass laws. They don't want to get into the process of prosecuting people who break them. Let's see.
Sir Hessman, is there time for one more question?
Okay. One more. There's some lady in the back there. Yes, I'm in too. All I saw was the head.
That I could see this contradiction in terms, and perhaps
you could clarify. I contradict myself all the time.
Well, perhaps you could clarify it for me. You seem very offended and to take issue with the lyrics of the song Cocktail, which talks about killing police officers.
So yet,
how do you defend the NRA or justify the NRA's position on semi-automatic, automatic, and assault weapons, which the sole purpose is to kill men and, in fact, often kill police officers?
I don't get it. Guns in the hands of a decent citizen are no harm to anyone. Indeed, you may not be aware, I've mentioned the fact that there are 240 million firearms in private hands in this country. You probably do not know, indeed, Senator Barbara Boxer, the junior senator from California, apparently is unaware, that the largest and fastest growing group of purchasers of small handguns, what she's fond of calling cheap handguns, are, yes, single women. Men with, someone earlier mentioned, abusive males with a permanently absent husband. And if they're going to spend any time with their kids, they've got to have a night job. And so, which is usually cleaning apart office buildings at night, they come home at 4 o'clock in the morning. The bus takes them within 3 blocks of their house, where they've got to walk that last quarter of a mile in the dark. Of course they want a handgun in their purse. There are 31 states that now have concealed carry laws, allowing a law-abiding citizen with no felony record to carry a firearm. At the time when these laws were passed, more and more states passed the laws every year. At the time when these were first proposed, there was a great to-do about it. They said, oh my God, it's going to be done fighting the OK Corral. It's going to be terrible. Not one person of the people who have had that used a firearm in those circumstances has killed anyone. It has reduced crime enormously in the states where it is in place. Not surprisingly. If you were a mugger and you were contemplating the odds against mugging some guy walking down the street, and you thought, wait a minute, what if he's got a pistol? And you pass him up. I guess that has to be the last question. I am very proud to have been asked to speak to you. I hope even those of you who disagree, and thank God we live in a country where we can disagree, I hope I said at least something that resonated with you. And I thank you all. God bless you all. And God bless you all.